Hi, Sarah from Foreign Equine here. Are you looking to support your foal's skeletal and cartilage development? Now in a new pelleted format, our Foreign Equine Calgrow contains an ideal combination of key vitamins and minerals to support the mare and developing foal. It is suitable to be fed to pregnant and lactating mares and foals from 2 weeks of age. Visit our website or ask our experts to find out more.
A very warm welcome to this Irish Horse podcast from Irish Country Living and the Farmer's Journal. My name is Helen Sharp and I'm the editor of the weekly Irish Horse Pages. For our 36-page sport horse supplement this year and for this podcast, I chose the theme of good guidance. Breeding horses is far from easy, and whether you're a hobby breeder like me or run a larger operation, I hope you can find some helpful and practical information to guide you through the 2024 breeding season and beyond. I'm lucky enough to be recording this podcast in the beautiful Wicklow Kildare borderlands, and I'm thrilled to be sitting down with two Irish Equine Veterinary Association committee members. The first is our host for today, Dr. Sue Salter, founder of SES Equine Veterinary Services, a general practice that specialises in equine reproduction. I'm also delighted to be joined by Dr. Sarah Ross, a board-certified internal medicine specialist currently working at the Irish Equine Centre. For this podcast, I asked our readers to send in any sport horse breeding questions or queries so that I could put them to our experts. Sarah and Sue have selected the most popular and pertinent questions, and if you're both happy, I'll hand over to you.
Thanks very much, Helen. Sarah, I'm going to start with the first question, which you're going to answer. Why have the EVA vaccines run out, and what exactly is EVA?
Thanks very much for this question, which is a very timely one this breeding season. The reason the EVA vaccines have run out is we actually only have one licensed vaccine here in the EU, which is Artervac, produced by Zoetis. And there has been a problem in terms of production of the vaccine by that company. And so we have widespread shortage of vaccine this year. That brings me on to what exactly EVA is. So EVA stands for equine viral arteritis. It's an infectious disease of the horse, and as the name suggests, it is a virus. In your typical healthy adult horse, the horse is likely to have fairly mild signs and recover without incident. However, the reason we get so excited about it is it's a known cause of abortion in mares. And we know from previous experience elsewhere that up to 70% of mares in a susceptible population can end up aborting. If a mare is infected late during her pregnancy, she can produce a live foal, but often these foals go on to succumb to a fatal pneumonia. The other unique aspect of equine viral arteritis is that if a stallion becomes infected, that stallion can end up being a carrier, because the virus can end up being harboured in the male reproductive tract, and then the virus is shed with the semen. So in that way, the carrier stallions can end up shedding the virus for months or years.
And does EVA exist anywhere in Europe?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So at the minute, Ireland is considered to be disease-free, and for the reasons I've just outlined, we'd very much like to keep it that way, and it's actually very important with respect to movement of horses. However, we can't rest on our laurels, because if we look at our closest neighbours, EVA has been confirmed both in the UK and in France in non-thoroughbred stallions in the last sort of 3 to 5 years. So we have to be realistic that there is a real disease threat there, particularly with the shortage of vaccines this year. Which brings me on to the next point, which is that pre-breeding testing is extremely important, including testing for EVA. And actually, there is an initiative this year for sport horse breeders, whereby they have €50 worth of funding that can be availed of to do these tests.
And Sarah, do you think it would be fair to say that maybe there are pockets of EVA and that it's picked out in countries that actually test quite a lot?
Well, what I would say is surveillance is happening at the Irish Equine Centre all the time. So any abortion submission that comes into the Irish Equine Centre, or even a foal that has died in the first weeks of life or was born weak, will be screened and tested for. So we do run vigorous surveillance. So I think we can be confident in our disease-free status.
And I think it's a very good opportunity to mention that the service at the Equine Centre for sending in abortions is actually a free service.
It is indeed a free service, and one that I think is very, very important to the industry and very useful for all breeders, be they thoroughbred or sports horse.
Yeah, so if I'm in a situation with a client whose animal has aborted, I will routinely recommend for the fetus and the placenta to go to the Equine Centre, where we basically get an array of free information, and that then allows me to better direct my client on what direction to take with her animal moving forward for the breed season and how to potentially keep the mare in foal next season.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Sue, because as well as disease surveillance, you're also providing further information to that client at a what can be an upsetting time.
Yeah.
So that is EVA. I think we might move on to the next one, Sue, which is a one for you. What is the best way to prepare a mare for breeding, and is it the same for natural cover versus AI?
Okay, so I think we'll just keep it simple and say that in general, it is the same for natural cover as it is for AI with respect to biosecurity. So, you know, testing for EVA, testing for EIA via bloods, and also testing for CEM, which is contagious equine metritis, so Tailorella, Klebsiella and Pseudomonas, three different bacterial families that we test for when testing for CEM. And we do clitoral swabs, and also we can do endometrial swabs to test for these diseases. And they could be considered STDs, but ultimately maiden mares can also carry some of these diseases, and they affect fertility and can lead to your mare not going in foal. So I think it's probably very important to test for all of those three components, which is very much commonplace practice in the thoroughbred industry in Ireland and across Europe, and also commonplace practice in the UK and in other parts of Europe in the sports horse world. So that's the first and foremost message that I'd like to put across. I do think that we should be testing for these diseases in the sports horse world in Ireland. Then secondly, is preparing your mare for breeding in the natural for natural cover and AI similar? Yes, it is. It is similar in that I would recommend, where time is allowed, I would recommend anyone to cut out the first cycle of the season in their barren and maiden mares. The reason that I would cut out this and not use this first cycle of the season, particularly when you're using frozen semen or chilled semen coming from abroad, or if you're sending your mare to a very busy stallion for live cover, the first cycle of the season is not reliable with respect to ovulating with the use of ovulation drugs. So timed ovulation is a lot more difficult to achieve in that first cycle of the season. So I would skip it where possible. And also with mares that have foaled, I would skip their first cycle, being foal heat. So mares can go in foal on foal heat, but across a population of mares and that go in foal on foal heat, it is more likely for them to suffer early embryonic loss. So they go in foal, but they later lose the pregnancy.
Great. The next one is breeding related to. We hear a lot in human circles about the biological clock, particularly in females. How old is too old to breed my mare?
It's a very good question. I think just like in the human world, I don't think there's a hard and fast rule. I think it's very much down to the individual. And some mares, just like some women, will look younger at certain ages than others do.
You are looking at me at the minute, Sue.
And you're looking at me, Sarah. So I don't think there's a hard and fast rule on this.
And it might be a bit of an old wives' tale, but I remember hearing in the past people saying it was harder to get a teenage mare in foal if she hadn't had a foal before. Is there any truth in that?
Absolutely, absolutely. So the older maiden phenomenon, and that's based on largely on a tight cervix. So if a mare has a foal earlier in life, it then leaves the cervix in a more elastic position for later on. And why is that important? So when a mare is covered, she needs to be able to spit out fluid out of her uterus after cover, because they all have a post-cover reaction to the semen. And when the cervix is quite tight and fibrosed, like in the older maiden, they find it more difficult to release this fluid, and therefore they don't go in foal. So there certainly is some truth in that.
Great. Sticking on this theme, how long is the mare's heat cycle?
So again, just like women, there is no hard and fast rule, but in general, a full cycle should take about 21 days.
Yeah.
Okay, so consistently, they should be out of season for 16 days.
Mm.
Okay, and then the estrus, when they're actually in season, can vary. And that's very much dependent on what size follicles they have when they come into season. So if they come into season after that 16-day period of being out of season on small follicles, let's say 15s or 20s, then they might be in season, or it might be 7 days before they ovulate, okay? But if they came into season on a large follicle like a 40, then they might be in season for a shorter period of time because they will ovulate quicker.
For those people availing of fresh semen, how long is freshly collected semen usable?
That is very much down to the individual stallion. Again, I'm probably going to use this phrase over and over during this recording, but there is no hard and fast rule. So basically, it comes down to the individual animal. So if you are using extender, you know, one of the tests that we'll do is basically a desk test. So you might put the semen in with lots of different extenders and come back to it the next day and see which is still, you know, has good motility and which semen is still alive, basically.
And do you check motility prior to insemination with fresh semen routinely?
Usually after insemination. But yes, you could, if you have enough in your syringe, then you should be able to test, yeah.
Next question relates to frozen semen. Why are some mares just not suitable for frozen semen?
I guess this kind of relates back to the question or the point you made about the older maiden, Sarah. So again, frozen semen, particularly some of the older frozen semen straws that are out there, some of the extender actually contain things like egg yolk in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this can actually cause a large reaction in a mare's uterus. And if the older maiden is inseminated with frozen semen, for example, it can actually be quite difficult to remove the fluid from the uterus, which is created from the extender within the frozen semen. Mm. So that would be one reason why some mares are not suitable for the insemination with frozen semen.
At what stage should I have a caslyx removed from my mare?
Yeah, so I suppose I'll answer that question, but then I'll ask you a couple of questions about it at the end. So again, there is no hard and fast rule on when to open up a caslyx. So, you know, mares are never going to go bang on their due date, or routinely you're not going to have all mares go bang on their due date. Some will go early and some will go late. But in general, I recommend people to take the caslyx out maybe 2 weeks before foaling, unless she looks like she is close or going to go a bit earlier than that. I think that that's a fairly safe approach. I often have clients panic about opening up the caslyx. Of course, it's better if the Caslyc is opened prior to foaling. But in the event that she does foal with the Caslycs intact, then we can always do a suture procedure afterwards to tidy her up. And, you know, Sarah, you've worked with plenty of mares who have had placentitis. What's your thoughts on a good time to open up a Caslyc?
Yeah, I suppose what sprung to mind for me is the fact that the normal gestation length in a mare is actually quite variable. And what's nearly more important is what is normal for that mare. So if your mare has foaled previously, it's a good idea to take a note of how long that pregnancy lasted for. And that will give you a rough ballpark as to when you can expect her to foal next time round. I suppose what we're getting at, Sue, is that we're nearly walking a bit of a tightrope, because we don't want the mare to foal with the Caslycs in place, but at the same time the Caslycs is there because we want a better seal at the vulva. We don't want that mare to be able to either suck in air or potentially have bacteria enter the reproductive tract via that route, because it can lead to things like ascending placentitis. And we'll talk about red bag a little bit further down, because I see it's one of the questions on the list, but certainly ascending placentitis and a big thick placenta is one of the risk factors for red bag delivery. Just in case any listeners don't know what a Caslyc is, you might want to explain that for us, Sue.
Yeah, Caslyc's procedure is basically where we put local anaesthetic into the vulva of the mare, and we basically zip her up and stitch both sides together after removing some of the tissue.
And does that have to be repeated every year?
Absolutely, yes. So if a Caslyc procedure is performed once, then the seal is never going to function properly. But it was never going to function properly in the first place, which is why we advise for the procedure to be performed.
Next question. How can we support our vets when we bring our mares to you? And I might add a little caveat to that, to say, how can we keep vets safe when they're doing reproductive work?
So my practice is ambulatory, which means I'm out on farms all day or at a client's premises. So having set of stocks in place, it is not considered safe to perform work and scan mirrors at a stable door. But another aspect of that is it's actually quite difficult for us to do our jobs correctly. So, for example, linking back into a Caslyc's procedure, it is a nightmare trying to perform a Caslyc's procedure at a stable door or without a set of stocks. So, Sarah, I'm going to ask you the next question. So, my mare is on antibiotics and bute for lymphangitis currently, and almost 10 months in foal. Should I be worried about the foal?
It's a good question, because actually you're pretty lucky if your mare gets through pregnancy without any issues whatsoever, and all maternal illness is associated with a slightly higher increased risk of sepsis or a complication in the foal. And in the case of this lymphangitis, I don't know if it's bacterial or not, but given that antibiotics have been prescribed, we have to presume it is. And so in this case, I would say potentially there is a cause for concern, but actually in practice, you're not going to do anything different than what we recommend as best practice, which is make sure your foal has good intake of good quality colostrum. Make sure they meet their milestones with respect to getting up and nursing on time, passing the first meconium on time. Have your vet check your foal within the first 24 hours of life. Know what is normal in a foal, so be aware that foals should drink from the mare frequently. Know that they should lie down to sleep. So a foal that's standing up sleeping is a cause for concern to me. A foal that stands underneath the mare and doesn't suck, so ends up with milk splashes on the face, is a cause for concern. So just pay attention to normal behaviour and seek veterinary advice if you have any concerns. So back to breeding and another age-related one. Some people say that I should take a foal from my three-year-old before her career begins. Is this advisable?
I think this again relates to the older maiden mare phenomenon. So is it advisable? Well, it's not advisable. It depends on how long the mare's career is going to be. And again, it just depends on the individual. So when mares are climbing up in towards their teens, it's much more likely that cervix is going to be fibrosed and it's going to be more difficult to get the mare in foal. So if you are predicting a very long career for this mare, then yes, it might be something to consider. Sarah, the next question is definitely one for a medic, I think. What are the correct procedures for a red bag delivery?
So before I really tackle this question, I think it's important to explain what a red bag delivery is and how anybody listening will be able to identify it, because really it is a true emergency of foaling. So in a normal foaling, the foal will be born within a white sac called the amnion, and the rest of the placenta is still attached to the mare's uterus. In the case of red bag delivery, red bag is actually layman's term for premature placental separation. So the placenta has already detached from the uterus and the foal is still inside. So it's actually really important that foal is helped to get to the outside world as quickly as possible, because the foal can't breathe and isn't receiving oxygen while it's inside. How are you going to know the difference? With a normal foaling, you'll see a little white sac, fairly translucent white sac, that might have identifiable bits of foal inside, such as the head or the hooves. In the case of a red bag delivery, you'll see something almost like red velvet protruding from the vulva. What you want to do is open that bag as quickly as possible. So I think in your foaling kit, beside your gloves and your lube, it's really sensible to have something like a pair of scissors, because sometimes in the case of red bag delivery, the placenta can be quite thick, and when you're in a bit of a panic, it can be hard to rupture with your fingers.
Can I just ask a question, Sarah? Is there any possibility of a red bag being mistaken for something else?
You could potentially mistake a prolapsed bladder for red bag. However, the bladder mucosa, while it will be pink or red, won't have that velvety appearance. So that's why I was saying to keep an eye out for that red velvet appearance. So going back to what we need to do in the case of a red bag delivery, we want to open the membrane, which is your placenta. You want to assist that foal to get out as quickly as possible. And when the foal hits the ground, you actually don't want the foal in lateral recumbency. You want them up in sternal, because it's much harder for foals to oxygenate their lungs properly when they're in lateral recumbency. So what I mean by lateral is on their side, and what I mean by sternal is sitting up with the chest underneath them. The key point I want to make with this question is that foal needs to be monitored closely, because the foal that is the product of a red bag delivery has potentially been starved of oxygen, and that can have significant consequences for the foal. And what can happen is the foal can appear completely normal at birth, and then over the coming hours, during the first 24 hours, mentation can change. So what I mean by that is you might start off with a bright foal that's sucking well, and then that foal can just become a little bit subdued, lose affinity for the mare, and progress into what we call the classic dummy foal.
Would it be fair enough to say, Sarah, that if there's suspicion of a red bag delivery, people should really call their vet?
They should absolutely call their vet, because I think the foal needs to be assessed post-delivery. The other thing that I think is very important is that the placenta is submitted to a diagnostic laboratory. Red bag is a funny thing in that we don't always know why they occur, but what we do know is that there's an association between red bag delivery and herpes infection. So that's one reason you want to get your placenta checked. The other condition that's associated with red bag delivery is ascending placentitis, so a big, thick, edematous placenta. So in both those examples that I've given, it would be very important to have your placenta submitted so that it can be grossly checked, but also looked at under the microscope.
And I get referred plenty of mares every year that had red bags the year before, mm-hmm. or placentitis the year before, mm-hmm. and sending it into the equine centre gathers loads of information that I can then use and advise clients on how best to proceed. And it means that we have ended up with plenty of foals at foot the year afterwards. For instance, with the great work that you guys do at the Equine Centre.
What does PG, I'm guessing it's not parental guidance, what does PG mean and why is it used on mares when breeding? That's for you, Sue.
I'd love if it was parental guidance, actually. PG is prostaglandin, so trade names, for example, would be estromate or genestram. And we use PG or prostaglandin to bring a mare back into season. That's the most. There's actually a number of different reasons why we use it, but that's the most common reason for it to be used. So what it does is it kills off the corpus luteum, which produces progesterone. Progesterone is what keeps a mare out of season. When the progesterone disappears, because the PG has worked on the CL, it then allows estrogen to be the dominant hormone, and estrogen is the flirt hormone. So that's how PG brings a mare back into season. PG, we use PG to short cycle mares, okay? So short cycling is the practice of bringing a mare back into season more quickly than she would have done herself. So when using PG, just to make it very clear, we do not recommend that PG is used blindly, because if you PG a mare with a full dose on a large follicle, you run the risk of causing the mare to ovulate on that follicle before she comes into season. So my recommendation for all our listeners is, if you're considering having your mare short cycled, I would advise to have your vet scan your mare and administer the PG. Don't do it yourself. So Sarah, this is definitely a question for you to answer. What can I do if my foal won't suck?
I think without doubt that is an indication to call your veterinary surgeon and get your veterinary surgeon out to examine that foal. What they'll most likely do is pass a stomach tube and administer colostrum. The reason we want to get colostrum in there quickly is we really have a vested interest in making sure that that foal has reasonable IgG levels. I wouldn't be a great fan of feeding foals via a bottle, because I think there's an increased risk of that foal developing an aspiration pneumonia. The foal isn't sucking for a reason, and that reason could be that the foal is slightly dummy, and foals that are slightly dummy tend to be at increased risk of aspiration just because the larynx at the back of their throat isn't working as well as it would be, say, in a completely healthy foal. So for me, it's a red flag. Definitely get your vet out and definitely get the foal tubed with some colostrum. The colostrum doesn't need to be sourced elsewhere. It can be milked and collected from the foal's own mare.
Can I just ask, I'm trying not to ask too many questions, I'm too busy listening, but there are colostrum banks, I think, though, aren't they, that people can maybe go to? Do you know much about that?
I know a little bit about it, in that some of the larger stud farms collect colostrum from mares that have good supply and good quality colostrum. So they would take the extra colostrum from that mare and put it in the freezer, basically, to fall back on. I would say if fresh colostrum is available from the foal's own mare, it's undoubtedly the best bet, but colostrum banks are a really good standby. And if you are in trouble, it's well worth contacting a big stud farm in your area, because you might find that they have spare colostrum. They're happy to share.
And just one related question, I suppose, if you've never collected colostrum from a mare before, what's the way to do it?
Some people are very comfortable just milking the mare with their fingers, and other people have all sorts of ingenious methods, such as attaching 50ml syringes and sucking with the syringe. I don't really mind, as long as good
hygiene is adhered to, so always collect into a clean receptacle, always have clean gloved hands, and do be sympathetic to the mare, and you know, put a little bit of lubricant on your hand and be gentle, because she will let you know if it hurts.
And is there a way to test the quality of the colostrum?
Absolutely, the quality can be tested via a refractometer. So if a mare has run milk, actually you nearly don't need to test it. You're going to know that the all the goodness, if you like, has been lost, and that would be one very good example. Just going back to Helen's point, whereby you would, if your mare's been running milk, you would want to get ahead of the game and make sure you have access to banked colostrum.
Very good, and it's all timely, really, isn't it?
Exactly. The sooner you can get the colostrum into the foal, the better, because absorption from the gut begins to slow after the first 12 hours of life.
So if you were to simplify the rule, is it fair to say that it's okay to use banked colostrum or some form of good quality colostrum up until about 12 hours of birth?
Yeah, I'd actually say colostrum within the first 24 hours is still likely to be useful. It's just that the absorption rapidly decreases after 12 hours, so you want to be as timely about it as possible.
And then you're into the realms of plasma.
Then you're into the realms of plasma. So I'm sure you'd agree with me, Sue. I think we'd all advocate taking a blood sample from a foal around 18 to 24 hours of life to have it tested for IgG levels.
Absolutely. So the stall side tests, which are a very good indicator. And then the alternative option, if you're looking for a numerical, so an exact value, is to take a blood and send it to your good selves up at the equine centre.
That's
to test.
Right, absolutely. And I think either way, you will have an answer. So we would consider a number less than 400 to indicate complete failure of passive transfer. So we can say that passive transfer has been inadequate and we need to intervene. Between 4 and 800 is more borderline, so we call that partial failure of passive transfer. And if finances allow, we would still advocate for colostrum to be given. Anything greater than 800, we would be very happy with and call that adequate or good passive transfer.
And I guess I'd just add to that, I often get asked, let's say, if there's a borderline result, oh, should I give my foal antibiotics? And I don't advocate antibiotics in those situations, because I'm fairly sure research and studies have even shown actually that you're better off going ahead and giving the plasma, that antibiotics combined with that low immune system aren't necessarily going to be of any help.
Absolutely, and actually the move in recent times has been away from prophylactic use of antibiotics, so that's the just-in-case approach, to reserving them for confirmed or highly suspected bacterial infection. And the reason for that is if we overuse antibiotics in any setting, we're actually just going to apply pressure to speed up development of resistance. So actually there's going to be a loss in terms of efficacy of those antibiotics.
Yeah, and I think, you know, now we're down to the last part really of the discussion, and probably the most important part of the discussion, antibiotics. And reasonable and sensible use of antibiotics. So from my point of view, when I am handing out antibiotics to an animal, I normally have a very good justification to use them. So for example, if it was a sick foal or an animal with a bad injury that looked infected, there are reasonable reasons to use antibiotics, but not prophylactically, not just in case. And I will often send in some samples to the likes of the Equine Centre to culture and grow the bacterial sample that's there, and then have it sensitised, so we know exactly what antibiotic is going to be most useful in that situation, which one is going to be, in inverted commas, most efficacious. And then the other considerations are length of time of that treatment. So the treatment has to continue until the infection is cleared stopping the antibiotics before the infection is cleared will actually contribute to resistance. Using too low a dose for the body weight of the animal will also contribute to resistance. Have you got any other points you'd like to add to that, Sarah?
Yeah, I guess one big consideration for me is always penetration. So which antibiotic is going to get to where we need it to go? So some antibiotics are very good at penetrating bone. Others are very good at getting into fluids, such as those within the CSF, which is the fluid that surrounds the brain. So vets will use their knowledge to select an antibiotic that will get to the right place. The other thing, just thinking back to the scenario of the prophylactic use in foals, as a just in case scenario, I think it's really important to remember that antibiotic use is not risk-free. So we can actually end up disturbing the balance of natural flora in the gut, and we can end up promoting diarrhea and other complications in these cases. So very much we want to reserve antibiotics, antimicrobials for bacterial infections.
Yeah, and I would say to any listeners out there, if you have antibiotics on your yard, I would encourage you to actually hand them back to your vet if they're just lying around the place. I do get the odd client that says to me, oh, you know, my animal had a wound and I had a shot of penicillin and I've given it that shot. So veering away from that sort of practice, absolutely always consult your vet before you even consider doing something like that. And ultimately, best to have the vet out to visit and make an appropriate, educated decision on how to proceed, especially if antibiotics are going to be used.
Well said, and I think as well the issue with leftover antibiotics is they actually have potential to lose their efficacy if they're not stored correctly, for example, and you've used a lovely example there of the bottle of penicillin. The chances of an adverse reaction happening are increased in cases where the penicillin hasn't been stored correctly in a fridge, for example. So if you haven't used it at the time, give it back so it can be disposed of correctly.
Huge thanks to Sue and Sarah for answering our sport horse breeder questions. I really hope their good guidance can help you with your breeding season. All that's left to say is thank you to you for listening, and I wish you every success with your mares and foals this year.
Are you looking to support your foals' skeletal and cartilage development? Now in a new pelleted format, Alporin Equine Calgrown contains an ideal combination of key vitamins and minerals to support the mare and developing foal. It is suitable to be fed to pregnant and lactating mares and foals from 2 weeks of age. Visit our website or ask our experts to find out more.